the high
Blog Talk Radio.
President Biden is still weighing options for a possible U.S. troop deployment to the Baltics and Eastern Europe. The move would be a response to Russia's amassing of troops and military equipment on its border with Ukraine. The president will take part in a secure video call with European leaders this afternoon. The call will include the leaders of France, Britain, NATO, and the EU. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu is defending the decision to extend the vaccine mandate for city workers by another week. James Rojas reports.
Inside City Hall, Mayor Wu discussed the high vaccination rates for departments across the city.
We are now at more than 94% of our entire City of Boston workforce that are vaccinated and in compliance with the city team policy.
But outside, Boston firefighter Sam Dillon and over 80 other fire personnel lined up to demand a compromise.
We hope that the mayor listens to all options that are on the table that we're presenting. There are viable solutions to this issue that don't involve placing Boston firefighters on the unemployment line.
Wu says at this time, come January 31st, city employees who are not in compliance with the vaccine policy will be told they've been placed on unpaid leave. James Rojas, Boston.
Opening statements are set to start in Manhattan in a criminal case against celebrity attorney Michael Avenatti. He's accused of cheating his former client, former porn star Stormy Daniels, out of $300,000. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Hey, Mike, what's up? Hey, with 2022 coming along, guess what? We got some news to announce.
What are we going
to
announce?
Well, we are announcing that we are going to be continuing to broaden our show, and we're moving to KIXI 880
AM KIXI
starting January 11th. We are going to be on Tuesdays from 3 to 4 p.m., but don't you fear, because everybody at KKNW will still continue to have our show broadcasting on Saturdays for the 2 hours, and of course, our replay options on Thursday morning.
Awesome.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for Alternative Talk weather outlook for Monday. We'll see areas of dense fog out there, so be careful while you're out commuting around today and this morning to work and to school. Those low temperatures around 33, 34, climbing up to about 42, 43 by this afternoon. We'll also see mostly cloudy skies. Tonight, the fog will roll back in, low temperatures dropping down to just above freezing, down to about 33. For Tuesday, Wednesday, and for Thursday, morning fog making way to partly sunny skies with sunburns and high temperatures in the mid to upper 40s.
Alternative Talk 1150 is your sports organization's safe bet when it comes to airing your team's game. Our players are all seasoned professionals when it comes to sports programming. Imagine your games being heard on local radio. Your team deserves the MVP treatment. Call 425-653-1150 today to learn how affordable and fun it is to broadcast your games on the radio. Call 425-653-1150 and make your next season something special. That's 425-653-1150.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned, because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next to you.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. Oops, make a little adjustment. Jacob and Olivia, don't yell at me for doing that. Sorry. Welcome, everybody. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. We got a great show for you today. Actually, a great lineup all week long. One of the things that I got a text message from Jessica yesterday, and I want to read it before I introduce Lisa Belts. And I just want to read it because it talks to an energy that we have here, whether we're in the office or on the studio or whatever we're doing. And Jessica, of course, we're watching a football game. The game I'm referring to, actually all the games were so good. All the games were just so good. I mean, this is like a whole another level of competition. Now, some of you are thinking, okay, you're going to talk about the team that lost. Now, look, Buffalo very early on, so I just got wiped out. But this is not what this says. It's not really about football. Jessica sends us, both of the football games today were picture-perfect examples of a possibility mindset. Now, this is from a team member on a Sunday having an experience with football, watching the game, and just watching pure perfection. And what I love about what she said is about possibilities. This week's show, the development of our network and what we're doing is that. And so much so that emails have come in from people wanting us to change our name. But we have another idea for that. And the way that you get to ideas is by doing what my very special Lisa Belch, my co-host here today, does, to know who she is. You need to know that she is somebody that spent a lot of years like me in the corporate world working on multiple industries. Now, I never thought in a million years that I'd be sitting here today with Lisa and telling everybody out there that our corporate life has helped shape us to delivering empowering messages. But that's not it for her. Women empowered the number four life. Think about that. Women empowered for life. Women empowered for life. Just think about that for a minute. Then think about becoming unshakable. Now, when you put all that together and you look at Lisa, who is a top coach, right? I don't even want to talk about how long she's been married. She can tell you that story. I forgot about that. When she and I talked, we had a very similar experience. Hers was at age 9. Mine was at age 6. And that experience, I don't know about her, but you're going to hear about it today from her. That experience shapes a life. And what I want to say about it is she met Jesus when she was 9. Mm-hmm. Jesus, Jesus, however you say it, my friends say I always don't say it right. It's okay. It's not the point. But when you have that, you understand the experience she's going to share, marriage, divorce, remarriage, blended families, oh, yes. I mean, it's almost like the line from The Wizard of Oz, right? Marriage, divorce, remarriage, oh my. And I think that comes from that show. So today I want you to meet a very special person, a very special coach. And we are talking about the journey of unbecoming. Lisa, so great. Thank you for joining me here today.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. I have been looking forward to this since we scheduled it. This is a premier opportunity for me, and I am just very happy to be here.
I love that it's like you're over there, I'm over here, still, quarantined, not for my safety, but for the safety of my team. And yet, we're unstoppable, we're unshakable. But let's talk about your journey. Let's talk about the journey of unbecoming. Let's talk about what that means. And for you, you get my signature question.
Okay.
I love this question. Look, I just briefly told people about you. I didn't even scratch the surface. I want to know, given everything you've done, everything you've experienced, every other person you've helped, what are some of the challenges and obstacles that brought you to this very moment?
Oh, that is a great question, Dr. Pat. So trying to keep this somewhat summarized, I am the youngest of 4 children, and so being the youngest has some trade-offs of its own, but I also learned sharing and giving and cooperation by having older siblings. I also was an only child, basically, from 8th grade forward, and so I also had the benefit of a lot of my parents' attention. I have two older brothers and an older sister. And so when everybody else left home and we needed to build a barn, I got to be the barn builder. And my dad and I did horses together. We actually lived in Yakima at that point in time. So I grew up doing 4-H. I grew up doing quarter horse shows, 4-H shows, mountain obstacles.
Well, hold that thought. Hold that thought.
Yep.
Because I want to take a short break. And when we come back, I'm going to say something cheesy. When we come back, talk about those two bonds. Again, you and I have something in common, except not Yakima. Van Cortlandt Park for me, you couldn't separate me from my horse. But we're going to take a short break, everybody. When we come back, we're getting right at it. Stay tuned.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about maximum medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
I love that. Welcome back, everybody. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Lisa, look, we're going to go right to the half, but I need to take a quick break. I love that you're talking about, you didn't say the words, but there's a level of heart connection bonding you were describing.
Yep.
Growing up or being in Yakima, having horses. I mean, I'm like right there with you. I'm like, oh my gosh. But that journey, everybody might think you and I show up and we haven't had any bumps in the roads.
Yep.
So what was that like for you with your dad, with the horses?
Yep. And actually, so one of the things we're going to talk about as we get into talking about unbecoming is the dark layers of cloth or the dark layers of life, the challenges of life that can get layered onto us that dim our light. And so part of why I kind of wanted to talk about being the youngest child and some of the other things is as children, we allow ourselves to pick up labels or belief systems. And sometimes we misinterpret simply because we're young and don't have life experience. And so all of those things that go into making us who we are and how we are and giving us our perspective on the world are very, very positive in most instances. But it's also those life experiences growing up that can help us become who we're not really designed to be. So growing up with a brother, you know, I always used to laugh. He used to practice roping on me. He used me for his karate kung fu dummy. You know, it's all those younger sibling things. And while there's a lot of positive bonding, you also pick up some things like, oh, well, I'm the littlest, I can't do such and such, or I'm the youngest, I'm not good at as good as my older siblings at things. And so that's kind of where we start unbecoming. Being in the horse world was delightful for me. You know, there used to be an article that talked about, you know, what's this thing between girls and horses?
Oh.
And my horse was my best friend. No kidding. you know, I would go riding out in the orchards or out in the foothills with just him and me, and we would spend hours. It was just absolutely wonderful way to grow up. You learn that bond with an animal. You learn to take command and control, because when you've got a 2,000-pound animal underneath you, you better be in charge. And so there's just so much good that comes out of that growth. You know, being the only one at home with my parents was absolutely wonderful for me. I just reveled in it. You know, my dad and I would take the horses and pack into the mountains. And again, that's where he and I had that really great bonding time. You know, I got to develop experiences. You learn resourcefulness. You learn resiliency. All of those really positive life lessons. Now, the flip side of all of this that we're also going to talk about is I was a perfectionist. And so junior high, high school, into college, I had these absolutely unrealistic expectations of what I should be able to do and accomplish. You know, if I didn't get things immediately, I wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, no one else put this on me. This was all something I took on myself. All of those things contribute to us developing belief systems that really don't serve us very well, but they're there. And until you even know that you have belief systems, to be able to think about them and examine them and go, is this really truth? Does this really resonate? Does this serve me? Was this a misunderstanding, or did I just flat out believe into a lie? All of those things contribute to us becoming who we're not.
Yeah. I love that we're talking about this, because we have to know, and you're going to talk about what unbecoming means here as we go forward, but all of this has to do with understanding a process.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because both of us learned something in our corporate careers. I know for me,
yeah,
I learned about process. But what that means is that if we can activate a process that allows us, what did my mom used to say? My mom used to, Benny hears me quote my mom a million times. She was a woman from the South, and she had so many different sayings. But she would say stuff like, girls, y'all need to take the best and leave the rest. 40 years later, I figured out what that meant. But isn't that what the process helps us with?
It is. It is. And you know, I talk about becoming and even unbecoming is a process, mm-hmm, not an event. You know, an event is a one-time thing. It's, you know, one and done. That does not work in the area of personal growth, either for unbecoming or becoming unshakable. So when you talk about it being a process, it very much is. And the entrance to that process is a trigger or a recognition or a desire to change.
Yeah. You know, I want to make sure people understand that this is not just something you're talking about now. You have a book about becoming unshakable.
I
want to just take a moment, because we went to a quick break. I would love for people to know, before we get into the process, because I don't want them to miss any of this, how do we find out about you? How do we get the book?
Great.
How do we
question.
Talk
so
about your coaching?
There is a copy of it. It's not going to show up on the blue screen. Okay, we're not going to do that. So the easiest way is to go to my website, which is www.lisabelts.com. And for those who are just on the air, Lisa is spelled a little bit differently. It's L-Y-S-A, and Belts is B-E-L-T-Z. So www.lysabelts.com. And Pat, I know we've talked about, my name is Lisa with a Y, L-Y-S-A, but a few months ago, God told me that I'm also Lisa with a Y, W-H-Y. And so my journey, over, particularly over the last 3 years of unbecoming and the becoming, is really helping me discover my why. You know, why am I a coach? Why am I writing a book? Why am I on this show? Why am I starting my own podcast? You know, it's that, what is my purpose? What is my calling? That core question that so many of us search for and struggle with. So, you know, the other way people can reach me is my email, and that is coachlisa@lisabelts.com.
Thank you. because all of what we're talking about, anybody that's listening today, if they've got additional questions, of course you can call into the show, 1-800-930-2819, or you can put a comment in on social media on Facebook. But the question that comes up for people, especially this month of the year, Lisa, is how do I begin? Where do I begin?
Absolutely. And so, again, this journey of unbecoming, so I'm going to read a quote, and the author of the quote is unknown, but this is the quote that starts my book. It says, maybe the journey isn't so much about becoming anything. Maybe it's about unbecoming everything that isn't really you, so you can be who you were meant to be in the first place. I love that quote.
Yeah.
And one of my mentors, Natasha Haslett, who has the Unstoppable Influence Program, she's the one that introduced me to the quote and to the whole unbecoming process. And so, again, to me, the starting place is a desire to change. You know, it's the little quote that says, if you want to get a different outcome, you have to take a different action. So when we as human beings reach a point where we're stifled, we're stuck, or we simply want something different or something better, you have to have a desire and a commitment to begin that change process. You know, we talk a lot about the butterfly metamorphosis process. To me, that's the becoming part. But that messy middle where the butterfly or the caterpillar has gone into the cocoon, it's what they call butterfly goo. I mean, it is just literally unbecoming a caterpillar to then turn around and become the butterfly that emerges. So the unbecoming process starts with recognizing where you're at in your phase or stage today, choosing to start beginning to make a change, and then thinking about what do you want the outcome to be? So in very simple summarized terms,
yeah,
that's one thing. The other analogy I like to use is that of a beautiful hardwood floor. It was, you know, think about a house built in the 30s or 40s. And then over time, somebody went, oh, linoleum is the new thing. So they put a layer of glue and a layer of linoleum on top of this beautiful hardwood floor. And then 10 years later, the colors and styles have changed. Another layer of glue, another layer of linoleum. Another 15 years, same thing happens. Now, a new owner comes in and goes, you know, I wonder what's underneath all of this stuff. And they start digging down, and they discover that underneath all of that, the foundation is this beautiful hardwood floor.
Yeah, boy, right?
So you go through that process of peeling back the layers. Linoleum glue, linoleum glue, linoleum glue, and then there's that hardwood floor. So unbecoming is finding those layers. What are my belief systems? What are the lies that I've bought into? What are the stories I'm telling myself today that may or may not have been true at one point, but they're not true anymore?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love the way you just described that for a lot of reasons, and let me ask you about it. Because, you know, rarely do we talk about taking things away, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we live in a place where every time you're turning on the TV, somebody's telling you to add something on.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a latest diet fad or exercise program or how to raise your kids, or it doesn't matter. It's like, let's just pile something on.
Yeah.
But I want to get back to something you said, and that is this idea of, well, maybe we need to take something off.
Yes.
What if we just remove something? And isn't that, in fact, the process of a sculptor?
It is. It's exactly the process of a sculptor. That's a beautiful analogy. It's chipping away at the stone to reveal the perfect statue inside.
So let's talk about, as we go through this and we look at things, part of what people have is a really hard time visualizing those things that weigh us down. Can we talk about that? And it's almost always, you know, the process of not being afraid to look at them. And sometimes we're like afraid to look at them. You know, that could be anything from looking in your refrigerator to looking at your finances, right?
Yep.
And so what we do is we like, no, right? But in order to follow along here, don't we have to get a sense of what the heck made me feel heavy today?
It is. It absolutely is. And again, I'm going to use myself as an example. I was not even aware until I started a pretty intense personal growth journey 3 years ago through my mentor, Natasha. And I did not realize how much self-judgment, self-hatred, and self-rejection that I was carrying. I had made decisions and choices in my past that were probably not the best or the right decisions, and I had shame and guilt and all of these self-judgment, self-condemnation, self-criticism. And Dr. Pat, I was not even aware that they were there, let alone how heavy they were. And so through my journey, one of the good descriptions I've seen is, you know, the song that we sang as children, "This Little Light of Mine, I'm Going to Let It Shine."
Yeah.
We all are born from heaven with a light inside of us. You know, that is your personality, your blueprint, your divine design. We all are born with that light. And then shame comes on and judgment comes on. And, oh, you're too heavy. You're too skinny. You're not pretty enough. Oh, you're a blonde instead of a brunette. Or you're a this or a that. And people lay those black claws on us, and we put them on ourselves. You know, it is those I don't measure up, I'm not good enough kinds of things. And
yeah.
So over time, we just end up with all these heavy layers. And some people, it just about snuffs them out.
Yeah.
But God.
Mm.
But God.
You know, it's so awesome to remember that. I was listening to, I listen to messages, whether it be TV, podcast. You know, I've always got something that's going on in the background, whether it's listening to some of the shows. But I've always got something in the background. And one of the things that I heard, which so resonated me here for the past 2 or 3 weeks, let me just say, is this idea of thanking God in advance.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about what that looks like for a minute.
Yep. Okay.
We can thank God for not just, please help me get this new job. And so one of the things I was reminded of, you only have to ask once.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to ask once.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to thank and praise often.
Yes.
And I got into a practice of saying, just outright saying a bunch of years ago, thank you, God, 70 times a day for 70 days, because it was the only thing that would quiet my mind. But I want to ask you, when we build this and when we start to peel the layers back,
mm-hmm.
we also have to thank what gets revealed, even if it is a weigh-me-down type of thing. Isn't that correct?
It is. It is. It absolutely is. And so one of the principles that I talk about is that we are all designed by a divine blueprint. So the Word of God says that before he even created the earth and created Adam and breathed life into Adam, God wrote out a book of days for every single one of us. God envisioned and designed and intended for every single one of us to be alive at exactly the point in time in history when we're here. And so from that divine blueprint, from that divine design, we move into our lives with gifts, talents, and abilities that God put within us. And when we are moving in those gifts, talents, and abilities is when we have life satisfaction, is when we have joy. And so when you think about what you're grateful for, you know, Psalms 139 says, thank you, God, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. God, you formed me. You knit me together in my mother's womb before I had ever seen a single one of my days. God designed us. And if you have nothing else to be thankful for, and we all have so much to be thankful for. You can always thank God for his original, good, perfect plan, because everything that God designs, he stamps as good. And so many of us get this feeling or this image that, oh, I don't measure up to what God wants of me. I don't measure up to God's expectations. And that is an outright lie. We're in personal growth. We are growing to become more Christ-like. But God knows we're human. He created us human. He says we're good.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, this means as we hold on to the goodness of life, and what tools, what ideas, what can we do to make sure we're holding on to that goodness and the way that feels? Because it's so easy to be tempted into negativity, into limited or no possibilities, into the idea of this is for them and not for me, into the idea that I will never fill in the blank. When we come back, we're going to be talking about how do we launch, recognize the process, and know when we're there. Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back. Lots of tools coming your way. Let's take a short break.
Innate brilliance already lives inside of you. Come discover it so you can shine brightly in this world. Join me, your host, Adrienne Cobb, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, during Wild Magic on TransformationTalkRadio.com, and get answers to who you are and where you belong. To learn more about me and the show, visit MyWildMagic.com. Again, that's MyWildMagic.com.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
In a roundabout of dysfunction, stop circling around difficult issues and find out what's been holding you back. Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Jane Mack, and I'd love to tell you about the latest technology of the Valara Company. I've been using the Valara Company equipment, the air machine, since 1992, and I have found them to be totally successful in killing mold, mildew, and keeping your house fresh and clean. If you'd like more information on that, you can go to MaryJaneMack.com or call our office at 888-777-4232. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone. It's so great to have all you tune us in and turn us on. Lisa Belts is joining me here today. I want to make sure you understand how to connect with Lisa. You know, this is one of the first shows she and I are doing together, but what's really important about this is, you know, on a similar mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know how to say this, but here's what I know. Our job as a network and the Dr. Pat Show is to bring you a variety of ways to level up and or up-level, whatever your language is. And I don't mean like your car or your house, although it could be that because I am not. Look, I think there's a reason God gave us material things, okay? You understand what I'm trying to say here. I mean, nobody creates like this beautiful garden and then says, oh, oopsie, that's not for you. But how do you get there? And do we let the external environment be that thing that will get us there or not? Lisa, you work with people. You help people really get to the place. And you help them go through and get rid of things that are unbecoming. How do people find out about you? How do they work with you? How do we get copies of your book? How to fill in the blanks.
Yep. That's excellent. So, again, my website is www.lisabelts.com. And on my website, there is a link to my book and accompanying workbook on Amazon. So you can order it from Amazon, and it is print on demand, so you should get it within just a couple of days. Also on lisabelts.com is a link to my life coaching. And so a few years ago, I was working with a life coach, and this light bulb went off over my head. You know, I literally swear that there's a light bulb that said, this is what I am designed to be and do. So my corporate career, I discovered I was doing a lot of coaching and life coaching as a project manager. And so like you said, Dr. Pat, all of that corporate experience of building teams and working with individuals feeds right into life coaching. As a project manager, I'm helping somebody accomplish a vision or a goal. As a life coach, I'm helping you be and become the person you were originally designed to be, because that's where you experience personal fulfillment and life satisfaction. That's where your light shines. It lights you up. You follow your passion and it lights you up. So if you click on coaching on lisabelts.com, that's going to take you to my coaching website. And I have a number of different packages. And I always do a complimentary 30-minute session with someone to make sure that they and I have a good rapport, so that knowing that we can work together as coaches. And so you can go out and schedule that. I use Calendly, links right into my calendar. We'll usually use Zoom. Although we can do FaceTime, I am an iPhone user, so really easy to get connected. So thank you very much for asking about that.
Awesome. Now, I know one thing along the way is that I didn't know what I didn't know about anything. I just knew I was at a place where I would call it a bottom. I've had several of those.
Uh-huh.
But that bottom left me hungry to learn. And I would like to ask you, you know, we've talked about this wonderful way that people can understand what they're capable of and what's possible. Mm-hmm. I would love to know, you know, what are some of the tools? What can we do to help people, right?
Yep. And so there's a number of tools that I use. And so, again, I'm going to refer back to my book and particularly my workbook. The workbook has additional information beyond the content of the book. The workbook is actually tools and exercises to help you unbecome and then become who you're meant to be. And the first exercise in the workbook is called Peace Thieves. So it's P-E-A-C-E, Peace Thieves. And so, again, it's what's weighing you down. And so the idea is to brainstorm a list. You know, don't edit. Don't not write anything down, big or small. Just brain dump a list of everything that's weighing you down. And then you step back and go, okay, of all of these things that I'm worried about, and I'm going to use a pretty random example of a comet hitting Earth, okay? Is that something you or I have any control over?
No.
So that would be one I would tell you to put a line through. If you don't have any direct influence or control over it, why are you spending energy worrying about it? So you go through this brain dump, you put a line through all of the things that are truly outside of your control, and then you look at the items that are left. And of those items that are left, pick one or two or at most three that you actually have control over. And that's where you're going to invest some time, some focus of what is at the root of this. And again, we talk about symptoms versus the root cause. You know, and so many of the things that we allow to weigh us down now oftentimes started years or even decades ago, and so we've been carrying them around. One of the exercises I do is I literally tell people to go get a rock, you know, a stone, if you would. Use a Sharpie and write whatever the word on it is. Divorce is one that comes up pretty frequently. The shame, the regret, the hurt, the pain, all those things associated with divorce. And then if I'm in a workshop setting, I literally have a wooden cross. People take that rock and turn it over at the foot of the cross.
Wow.
And you leave it there. If that's not the right thing for you, this same approach works for anyone of any belief system. Take that rock and go find a body of water, a river, a pond, a canyon, and heave that rock and let it fall and let all of the negativity associated with that go with it. So you're cutting it off. You're letting it go. And one of the pictures that God gave me a few years ago is I'm walking down the road carrying a gunny sack full of rocks. And this is where my rock analogy comes from. Jesus comes along in a wagon and says, you know, get in and let me carry your burdens for you. So I crawl in the back of the wagon, and I'm sitting there. And we go a little ways down the road, and Jesus looks back, and I've still got the bag of rocks over my shoulder. I'm in the wagon, but I'm still carrying the rocks. And so what we've got to do is open up that gunny sack of rocks. It's like, what do you have in your backpack that you're carrying that is weighing you down? Pull those things out, identify it, release it, and don't pick it back up again. So that's where if you can literally throw that rock in a body of water, let it go to the bottom and stay there.
So, I love it. I mean, can I ask you about this? Because I so relate to rocks. I mean, you know, when Linda was here visiting, I threatened to put a giant rock garden right in the backyard, like how to bring in these giant boulders. I'm not sure where that comes from. As a matter of fact, one of my native, my indigenous name is actually rock tree. But there's something powerful about rocks.
Mm-hmm.
If we hold that energy you just talked about having that burden be lifted.
Yep.
And to make sure we're thinking in advance to live a burden-free life. You know, I love that you're talking about rocks because rocks and the idea of them, just saying the word, you can visualize how it weighs us down.
Yes.
When we do that, what does it open us up for?
Well, you know, nature doesn't like a vacuum, right, or a void. So when you take one thing out, you also need to intentionally decide what you're going to put back in its place. So if you have a burden of shame in its place, you're going to put in self-acceptance and self-love. And so, again, in our society, we are so afraid of self-love. And again, like anything else, there is an appropriate and inappropriate, a use and a misuse. But we are so focused on being afraid of owning our talents, of admiring ourselves for what we're capable of, particularly in and I don't want to exclude men, but particularly women. You know, we are raised and taught to be quiet, to be humble, to be all those things. And there's a place for that. But again, when God created man and woman, he said, and they are good. Yes, we are growing. Yes, there are some things we have to unbecome. But the gifts, talents, and abilities that God put in us, he put in us to let our light shine. And so when we take on shame and guilt and self-condemnation, or we think we don't look right, we're overweight, our hair's too long, our hair's too short, our hair's too curly, whatever. You know, those are the things that have to come off. And in their place, it is appropriate self-love and self-acceptance. Because Jesus taught us to love others as we love ourselves. And if I'm rejecting me, how can I completely accept you? How can we be in relationship one with another and have pure communication if there's this barrier?
You know, when we're talking about this, it sounds so, let's just use the word simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the simplicity analogy. I want to talk about, if we could, talk about the ego for a minute. You know, I had procrastinated to plant bulbs and
uh-huh.
flowers,
yep.
right? For some reason, I don't know, sounded daunting. And I had my friend come over and sort of get rolling with it. And I was watching her. And I watched the simplicity. She took the little hole maker, made the hole, and put the bulb in. But she said something interesting to me. She said, "This looks simple, but you better make sure you're putting the bulb in the right direction."
Correct.
And I thought, see, every step in life has a tip like that, right?
Yep.
And I was so struck by that, that what we're talking about today and how to visualize comes to the forefront. It is so simple, but
mm-hmm.
you better make sure that the visualization and the intention is in the direction we want it to go. Can you talk about that and how
yes.
the ego will fight for us to not to follow good, orderly direction?
Yeah, so you know what ego stands for, don't you?
Yeah.
Edging God out.
Yep.
And so, you know, you kind of go back, when you think about ego, you go back to the little angel on one shoulder and the little devil on the other shoulder, you know, that conversation kind of thing. So ego's job is to protect us. It is to make sure that we don't take unusual risks and put ourselves out there. So in coaching, we talk a lot about comfort zones. And so if you envision your comfort zone as a circle and you're the dot in the middle, through coaching, through personal growth, you kind of get up towards the edge of your comfort zone, and it gets a little uncomfortable. It's the frog in the water thing again, right? The water's getting a little warmer, and you're getting a little more uncomfortable. And your ego's going, no, 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 don't do it. Don't take the risk. Don't take that step. Don't quit your job. Don't launch out there. Don't start that business. Don't write that book. You might get rejected. So ego's job is to protect us. But ego doesn't have an understanding of calling and purpose and internal motivation. Ego's job is just to keep you safe. And so when we get to the end of that comfort zone, if you listen to ego and you shrink back, your comfort zone also shrinks. And if you do it again, your comfort
right.
zone shrinks.
Right.
And again. Now, good news is the opposite is true. If you get to the edge of your comfort zone and you break through, your comfort zone expands. And that's when you get into that personal growth. And the more you do it, it's like muscle memory. The more you do it, the easier it gets. And so I want to go back to a couple things that you talked about, still
sure.
related to ego, but it is setting an intention and it is choosing, visualizing where you're going. So I could go back and teach my younger self one thing. It would be to set intentions. I was never, ever taught to set intentions.
Right.
And if I could go back, that would be the one thing I would do completely differently. You know, obviously we can't, but I can start from here. And so part of my personal growth has been intentionally stating to the positive, what do I want? I want to move from being a corporate employee to being self-employed at some point in time in the future. And there's some milestones that have to happen along the way. So I'm setting an intention of those things I want to create. And one of the things the Holy Spirit told me a few months ago is you get more of what you've come to expect. So if I live in the expectation that my parents had diabetes, my grandparents had diabetes, I'm going to have diabetes, my kids are going to have diabetes, you're darn certain you're all going to have diabetes.
Right.
But if you stop and set the intention that by the blood of the Lamb and the work of the cross and my testimony, diabetes stops with me, you can completely change that trajectory and change that outcome by setting the intention and taking the action steps. You know, so many of us have set new goals for 2022 being the month of January.
Yeah.
And I want to talk for just a second about,
please,
it's not just any action, you need to take the right action. But, you know, we've talked before about my quote about God can't steer a parked car, right?
That's right.
That fits really well with intention and visualization and getting into action. So sometimes you have to pick a direction, even if you're not positive that it's exactly the right direction. That's where we get into procrastination. We get into perfectionism. Get in motion. And if God needs to, he'll tell you to take a right, and take another right, and then you can get turned around. But once you're in motion and flowing with the Holy Spirit, then you can get on track. So when I talk about moving into action, yes, get into action, but then you're listening for what is the right action. Because if I don't have an intention set, you know, any road will get you there if you don't know where you're going.
Yeah,
I want to be going someplace, and that goes back to that intention. And again, I'm going to go back and touch on ego again, because this is where ego is going to come in and say, oh, don't take too much risk. Be careful. You know, you might get rejected. What if you go on the Dr. Pat show and you say something stupid?
Don't worry. I've been there. But part of this I want to really touch upon in the time we have left. You know, there's a thing that two of my mentors kept saying along the way, you have to trust in the process, Pat.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You have to trust in yourself. You have to trust that the fact that you picked Claremont as the school you wanted to go to and then were put on a wait list, you have to trust that you're being directed not to go in the year you thought, because there's a reason why you didn't get accepted in that year, but to wait. And sometimes it's so hard. I'll tell you what I'm finding. It is the waiting period is impossible without my connection to the divine.
Yes.
It's just not possible.
Yes.
It becomes anxiety, stuckness, depression, unanticipated failure. I mean, you name it.
Yep.
But I want to ask you to talk about that, because looking back, not knowing what I didn't know and trusting, it led me to my purpose.
Yes.
Which I didn't know and had a hard time defining. But 20 years ago, I'm telling you, a wrong phone number put me on my path. And I didn't know I went to school for 10 years to get something so people could call me Dr. Pat on radio and TV. I didn't know that. But let's talk about how important trust is, even if we don't know the why.
Yes.
Why am I going to school in California? Help me out with that in the minutes we have left, please.
Yes. So it's really interesting that you bring this up. So instead of doing a word of the year, I've switched to doing words of the quarter. As exponential a growth as I've gone through in my personal growth track, typically a word of the year doesn't hold for me anymore. So I just want to throw out the idea of pick a word for a season rather than maybe the whole year. It may be, but anyway. So what God gave me was the word rest. R-E-S-T.
Mm.
And so I lived with that for a little while. And then he said, oh, by the way, REST is an acronym. Go figure out what it is. And so I brainstormed words started with R-E-S-T. And what it boiled down to was really experience spiritual trust. So that is my focus for Q1 this year.
Yeah. Oh, man. It is so important. And it really is important for us to understand that even if some of the decisions, Lisa, some of the decisions we're making, you know, seem odd to other people.
Yeah.
Right? I love when I get the gift hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
People in the spiritual community call it hitting the pause button. I don't call it procrastination. You understand there's a difference. But
there is a difference.
Okay.
Yep.
But I want to ask you in the couple minutes we have left, what is the space of hesitation allowed for in the world of God consciousness?
Yep. So, again, we tend to be, and particularly in Western culture, so into action. We also tend to assign value to people by their productivity. What have you produced? We need to take a step back and to remember we are human beings, not human doings. And so part of the value of that rest, that pause, that hesitation, is to allow your divine connection to affirm or to tell you that the timing is off or to tell you that that's a great idea, but it's not yours. I have a lot of really great ideas, but some of them are not my assignment, if I can use that word. So, you know, we talk about waiting on the Lord, and we talk about God being a God of 11th hour. And a lot of times, we have to get to that point of being almost a little desperate to see God move before he gives us the answer. And what I have found, and I am still experiencing, is that God only gives me part of the picture. Because if I saw the whole thing, it would overwhelm me, and I would run the other direction.
Right. Yeah. I love that you shared that, and hopefully we'll get into that a little bit more, because one of the things I also learned is that our nature is to make sure we're getting intermittent gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I love is, you're right, you know, some of us see the whole picture, but then we're guided as to that next step, and
yes,
we have to follow it. I want to thank you for this today. I can't wait till we continue this conversation. People can find out more about you. Can you again remind everyone, how do we find out about you? How do we get the book? All of the above. Thank you so much for today.
Well, thank you for having me on. This has just been great. And again, I want to thank you and your full team. You guys are awesome and amazing. So I do want to mention my podcast is coming up this Wednesday at 6 p.m. Mountain, and it is the Unshakable Living Show. And this week, I'm going to have a special guest on, Kristen Oakley, and we're going to be talking about your unshakable identity. Yep. And so, again, my website is www.lisabeltz.com, and it's LYSABELTZ. And you can reach me at coachlisa@lisabeltz.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good foggy Monday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Sound. Quick reminder, yeah, again, bring those speeds down. Give yourself a little more room to the vehicle in front of you while you're out. Commuting around, limited visibility. 405 northbound is still heavy out of the Pesters up through the Kingsville Hill. It'll break the top there around the I-90. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Dr. Pat Show being brought to you by the Transformation Talk Radio Network. In
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. Wall Street is on track for its worst monthly decline since 2020. Economist and former Obama advisor Austin Goolsbee says today's decline shows any optimism about the economy is quickly dissipated.
People were thinking, we're getting a vaccine, the thing's going down, by the summer this is all going to be gone away. And we got two different variants in between there, plus some inflation.
The Dow was down over 1,000 points at times today. Monday's decline put the S&P 500 down more than 9% this month. Legislation is being floated to prohibit members of Congress from owning or trading stocks. A bipartisan group of House members sent a letter to Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Republican leader Kevin McCarthy, citing widespread public support for such a measure. President Biden is considering whether to deploy U.S. troops to the Baltics and Eastern Europe. It's among the options the president is weighing in response to Russia's military buildup along the border with Ukraine. The U.S. is already pulling most of its diplomatic staff and their family members from the American embassy in Ukraine. The IRS will start accepting tax returns today. Unlike last year, every penny of unemployment will be taxed.
The government views unemployment benefits as replacement wages. They are generally taxed the same as wages.
University of North Texas accounting professor Peggy Jimenez says that will wipe out refunds and some will owe money this year. More information is being released about a deadly Southeast Texas hit and run which left a sheriff's sergeant dead. Harrison County Sheriff Sergeant Ramon Gutierrez was killed this morning while blocking an exit ramp on Sam Houston Parkway near Tidwell.
A vehicle basically barreled down, went around his motorcycle, striking Sergeant Gutierrez directly.
Sheriff Ed Gonzalez says Lavia Spry refused to stop after hitting Gutierrez, but was eventually captured over a mile later. Gonzalez thinks the 40-year-old knew what happened because of all the law enforcement vehicles following her. Spry is accused of intoxication manslaughter, evading arrest, and failure to stop and render aid. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
When you buy health products, you can save up to 50% at VitaminLife.com, the world's largest selection of supplements, herbs, homeopathic, health and beauty products, and more. Choose from VitaminLife.com's 30,000 products from over 700 brands, including Solaray, Garo Formulas, New Chapter, Country Life, Source Naturals, Nature's Way, Enzymatic Therapy, Now Foods, Doctor's Best, and Aubrey Organics. Go to VitaminLife.com.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for Alternative Talk weather outlook for Monday. We'll see areas of dense fog out there, so be careful while you're out commuting around today and this morning to work and to school. Those low temperatures around 33, 34, climbing up to about 42, 43 by this afternoon. We'll also see mostly cloudy skies. Tonight, the fog will roll back in, low temperatures dropping down to just above freezing, down to about 33. For Tuesday, Wednesday, and for Thursday, morning fog making way to partly sunny skies with sunbreak and high temperatures in the mid to upper 40s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Champion Your Life with me, Leanne Champion. This is where we get to reflect, refine, and reboot your one precious life. In this space, we take a deeper look at what's holding you back. Maybe you want to show up differently for the people in your life. Maybe you're struggling with your emotional well-being. Maybe you feel as though something's missing and you want to get excited about your future. There's some good news. You can shift your perspective and begin to walk through the world in new, refreshing ways. I am a certified life and well-being coach who was called to create this show as a means to facilitate a journey of personal development. You have the power to change. Your life is precious. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Champion your life starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Champion Your Life with me, Leanne Champion. I hope you're enjoying your day wherever you are. It's a beautiful fall one here in Connecticut. Today, we're going to actually talk to all the people pleasers out in the world. And more specifically, we're going to talk about becoming more aware of people pleasing tendencies and eventually learn how to implement our tagline, which is, learn to speak your truth in love. Learn to speak your truth in love. So let me start out by painting a few scenes for you, just right off the bat. There's a woman out in the world who has tremendous anxiety. because she wants to tell her boss that, no, she won't work overtime for the third day this week, but she's terrified to do so. And there's also a man who feels very resentful in his relationship because he feels that he's always the one giving and his partner is always taking. And he's afraid of the reaction he will get if he addresses how he feels. And there's a teen out there in the world desperately trying to fit in, and she's giving in to peer pressure just to be accepted. And though these stories really differ, these people share a painful secret. They worry that if they are truly and authentically themselves, that they won't be loved and accepted. And they've spent their lives morphing into smaller, more acceptable versions of who they really are, and so far away from the way that God truly created them. And with these just small examples, I want to welcome you all to the world of people-pleasing. It's interesting to note right off the bat that people-pleasers don't usually seem like the kind of people that others look at and think, well, I think they need some help. They're not the kind of people who send out obvious mental health red flags or who exhibit a tremendous amount of distress. In fact, they just seem like lovely, generous people who have it all together. And I'm going to just say right from the get-go, I love them and I get them and I understand them because I too was a people pleaser. I actually now refer to myself as a recovering people pleaser. But truly, in my teens and early 20s, I used to listen in awe as my friends splattered their bold, unfiltered truth across our conversations. I mean, they had no problem telling it like it is. You know, and I, on the other hand, just wanted everyone to be good. I wanted everybody to be happy no matter what. Genuinely felt that it was my job somehow, and I would just jump through hoops to make sure everyone was okay. I was what you would call the peacemaker. I was the one that said, yes, sure, I can do that for you. I'll figure that out for you. I was convinced that somehow I could make it work for everyone. It was really wild, right? But I really tried. Somewhere along the line, I think around my 30s, I started to realize and come to the conclusion that people pleasing was really way too exhausting. And that exhaustion, I realized, in that exhaustion, we tend to lose ourselves really fast. In a way, it's interesting. People pleasing can be very addictive. I mean, it does feel good to help others, right? But if it's at the expense of you, it can become debilitating. You know, the problem for people pleasers is that they inevitably run out of people pleasing theme. I mean, what starts off as a genuine desire to love and please others can turn into resentment, right? And good old-fashioned anger. So human, right? I mean, people pleasers can only please so much before they crack. And some will crack, and you will never know it. Their behavior might be a little different, a little passive-aggressive or sarcastic, and with seemingly no reason. But you know what? There's always a reason. In the years since my more extreme people-pleasing youthful days, my coaching has led me to speak with other recovering people-pleasers, and I have found it fascinating in my research that people-pleasing is actually learned at a very young age, and often it will involve a parent or a caregiver who has very little patience and gets set off easily. And when we're little, we figure out that there's almost a formula, right, for this child-parent dynamic. If we please that parent will stay calm, right, and we're happy. And once we figure this out, well, we keep this tool handy because then we realize, oh, my goodness, this works with a lot of different kinds of people. interesting to acknowledge that this skewed tool can stay with us if we aren't careful for a lifetime. Now, within a family, a form of people-pleasing could show itself by humor. I mean, if you can make someone laugh, I mean, wow, that can settle a room, can't it? It can deflect any negativity going down. So, at its core, people-pleasing can be a form of defense, can it? I think all the families in the world should thank the people-pleasers because they did a lot to keep the peace within their families. But you can see where it could be a very fine line for the people pleaser themselves, as they often take on the brunt of the energy. But within family, people pleasers are seen, really seen as soft one kind, and they truly are, but there's also a part of them that desires reciprocation of some kind. They do what they can to please others with the hope of receiving similar treatment in return. It's interesting. When we are people pleasers, we are often looking into another person's eyes and immediately trying to guess what it is that they want me to do. And often, when we think we figured it out, we haven't processed it yet, but we'll just go out and do it, whatever it is. And why? Why do we do that? For so many people, it's wrapped up in our own self-worth. Some people find their self-worth by the approval of others, and I have found in my own life that's a very slippery slope. So in order to create that independence and happiness for ourselves as we age, when we are breaking patterns of people-pleasing, we need to actually look into our own eyes, right, and not revert to maybe how we were with our parents and actually ask, wait a minute, what do I think? How would I feel doing this? And what would please me? It's funny, though, for so many people pleasers, that is the last thing they would think of doing. It's not even on their radar. They are so accustomed to looking outside of themselves, actually preferring to do things for other people. And boy, oh boy, there is a fine line between helping others and being a people pleaser. And mistaking one for the other can be detrimental to our soul, to our well-being. I love this slide that I'm going to show you all. When you engage in people pleasing, you are out of integrity with yourself, your goals, and your dreams, in your life's mission. I'm going to say it again because it's so powerful. When you engage in people-pleasing, you are out of integrity with yourself, your goals, in your dreams, in your life's mission. I can remember a powerful moment for me when I was letting go of some of my people-pleasing scenarios, and one of them I was serving on a board, and that had really, truly been life-changing for me for many years, but now was actually going a different direction. And I began to realize I no longer belonged on that board. It had nothing to do with them. It was more that I realized that my skill sets didn't really match their new vision. And that was okay, but it was one of those moments that I had to really ask myself, wow, so Leanne, why is it hard for you to leave this board? And I realized it was the connection, right? We're all wired for connection to other people. But then I had to take it a step further. I had to say, are you staying to people please the others? Or did I just not want to say goodbye to this tribe? You know what? I actually think it was a little bit of everything. So what did I do in this situation? I stopped. I paused. And I did what I teach you all now. I reflected, I refined, and I rebooted. And I left that board. I've spoken with so many people who are working towards conquering their people-pleasing patterns, and some may be recovering from codependent relationships and are now setting more empowered boundaries for themselves. But most importantly, what's so beautiful to see is that they're learning the art of speaking their truth in love. I mean, if you spend the majority of your time focused on others' needs, I mean, you are going to drain yourself and be emotionally deficient 95% of the time, solely focusing on other people. And that's what a map never works in your favor, right? It only highlights a major issue in your life, because a people pleaser really is just accommodating dysfunction. And ironically, the dysfunction shows up in both people's lives, the people pleaser and the person being pleased. So I want to just give you three simple steps that are so simple that you won't forget them, which is awesome, right? Number one, if it drains you, or if it causes you resentment, or if someone doesn't reciprocate in your life, you need to pause and ask yourself, why am I doing this? Once again, if it drains you, if it causes resentment, or if someone does not reciprocate, you need to reflect, refine, and reboot. I think this very simple tool will, in fact, paint a bigger picture of how to get beyond the level of draining your own emotional bank account. Remember, this is key. Giving, caring, and pleasing others is supposed to come from such a purely enthusiastic and compassionate place. It should not involve any anger or resentment or hope of reciprocation. So it's interesting. If that seeps in while you're giving, then you're really not giving anything pure, right? You're merely sacrificing yourself. And I know one will argue that sacrifice is noble and kind and bold, but doing it every day with everyone or many, many people in your life, you know somewhere that deep down inside, it's just not a great way to roll. Here's just one more interesting thought. What if disappointing people doesn't necessarily have to be a red light? Doesn't have to be a bad thing. What if sometimes it's actually a sign that you are merely aligning with the best version of yourself? Ever thought of looking at it that way? We're going to go for a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to blow our own minds and discuss four truisms around people-pleasing that will help you to break this pattern for good. And I promise you might be hearing yourself in some of these examples, but it's okay. You've been listening to Champion Your Life with me, and we're going to be right back.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Day-to-day living can be difficult in our world today. Most of us don't know how to live a peaceful, joy-filled existence. Learn how to break through these barriers and live a transformative life on Love and Light with me, Dr. Lisa. Every day living in peace. Every second and fourth Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To work with Dr. Lisa, visit EducationThroughEngagement.com.
On Champion Your Life, and we're talking to all those people pleasers out there in the world. There's a lot of us. We are now looking at the four truisms that will help you break people pleasing patterns. So here we go. Truism number one: if you don't speak your truth will speak to you through your health. I'm going to repeat that. If you don't speak your truth will speak to you through your health. Whew, that's a big one, right? At first, staying silent to keep the peace sounds like a really, really good idea. I mean, why should we speak the truth in love and deal with others' negative reactions when we could just, you know, stomach our own discomfort? No. Those of us who play the role of peacekeeper in our families of origin will find this approach familiar and maybe even comfortable. But the real truth is, and hear me, external peace does not create inner peace. I'm going to repeat that. External peace does not create inner peace for us. When we stay silent and keep it in, ironically, those around us may in fact seem blissfully unaware. But we will feel the repercussions both physically and emotionally. When we stifle our voice for long periods of time, we can feel anxiety, anger, jaw tension, sleepless nights, stomach aches, and sadly, even depression. But when we become recovering people pleasers, we recognize that the truth and love isn't some silly, cheesy self-help mantra. No, in fact, it's truly necessary for our emotional and physical well-being. Truism number two, expecting others to read our minds is a recipe for resentment and anger. Truism number two, expecting others to read our minds is a recipe for resentment and anger. You know, I used to think that if the people really knew me and loved me, that they would predict my needs too. Wrong. I was often disappointed when others didn't show that they cared in the way that I wanted them to. I mean, what is the matter with them? How come they didn't know? When we assume that others should share the same definition of being cared for, I think that's when we really get ourselves in trouble. I mean, you might be longing for your partner to say, I love you. You are amazing. But instead, he shows his love by changing the tires on your car instead. In Gary Chapman's book, The Five Love Languages, he really beautifully depicts the ways in which people show love. And they're all different. They include words of affirmation, quality time, gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. And I think that's incredible. I think we should all avoid the guessing game here in relationships and actually communicate our needs to our mates and significant others. When we take the time to explain ourselves to loved ones, it helps to avoid all sorts of mixed messages, right? Mixed signals that could lead to really painful miscommunication. But I think when we take the time to explain ourselves to those we love, so much is possible. Respect blossoms. Love gets healthier. It's just a win-win. Truism number three. Caregiving can actually become selfish when we don't have a strong foundation of self-love. I know, I got to say this one again for you. Caregiving can actually become selfish when we don't have a strong foundation of self-love. It's really interesting how many people pleasers take care of others because it gives them a sense of value. And we will often structure our identities around being reliable, right? Generous, good listeners, and maybe even self-sacrificial. And I first just want to say, all right, nothing wrong with all of those beautiful attributes. However, if we give to others without taking care of ourselves, without developing our own interests, we may find that our need to be needed is our only purpose in life. And then what happens? Our well runs dry. And this also means that we may insist on caregiving even when our efforts are no longer required, requested, or welcomed, which ironically, on the flip side, can violate someone else's boundaries and autonomy. Stay with me. In simpler terms, someone might be saying to you, I've got this now, but you are not listening. So the lesson in this is just give yourself the same degree of love and care that you want to regularly give to others. Take that quiet time for you. Plan that month out. Take that exercise class. Treat yourself to a delicious dinner. This way, when you do decide to care for others, you can do so with zero strings and zero guilt attached. Does that make sense? This is really something so many people need to consider. And truism number four, just because it feels awkward to state your needs and set proper boundaries, don't panic. It only means it's new to you. Just because it feels awkward to state your needs and set proper boundaries, don't panic. It only means it's new to you. So interesting. Many of the people that I've spoken with will tell me how scary it feels to state their needs at first. I mean, for them it just was like impossible, terrifying, overwhelming. I'm sure some of you can relate. However, that discomfort should be seen as a natural growing pain. I mean, after all, breaking the people-pleasing pattern in our lives means rewriting the scripts that you've been following since childhood. Perhaps as a child, you were told that speaking your truth made you unlovable. Or perhaps you were bullied in school for being different and made fierce efforts to blend in as a result. It's so important to understand that you are breaking years of decade-long patterns of making yourself either small or maybe even agreeable, maybe both. But the good news is all of this will feel challenging, less challenging with practice. I mean, every time you do it, less challenging every time. And I also want you all, just for a moment, to reconsider the emotions of anxiety and discomfort in these instances. Instead of interpreting the feelings of anxiety as a sign of somehow, oh no, I'm doing it wrong, while you're stopping, right, a pattern of people pleasing, I want you to reframe it. Reframe that anxiety and discomfort as a sign of growth. Yes, that you are indeed doing something new and positive. And yes, there's going to be some discomfort involved. Yes. You might feel anxiety, but you are growing as well. So interesting. After setting a boundary, many of my clients will say, oh, my gosh, I suddenly feel like just this really bad person, like a bad wife or bad husband, a bad colleague, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. You are not. You are not. I want you to hear me on this. But you know what's happening here? What's happening is your nervous system needs to catch up with you, with all your growth. And sometimes it just takes a little time, but it will catch up. You will begin to understand this process and let it flow. So just when you're feeling that discomfort, all that anxiety, don't panic. Just breathe and know you are on the right track. You know, in wrapping all of this up, there are just a few things that will affect you in life as much as being a people pleaser, and I mean both in business and in life. I believe this shows up for many people in some capacity. And it's interesting, we can have broken the people-pleasing pattern in several areas, but it may still show up in a few other areas. And if we are not conscious and aware, what we do in those moments is we basically hand the reins of our lives over to someone else. And I want you to remember that you are not usually their number one interest. You know, it's really important to choose and be wise about who we include in our lives. God has wired us for relationships, and He wants us to be wise and choose carefully. I'm going to leave you with this thought. Please choose the right people who also care about you, with whom you have a deep connection. They'll stand alongside you, even when you decide something they don't like. The ones who want to control you are only there to get something from you. They most likely will be mad at you when you make a decision that they don't agree with. Better to find that out now rather than later. I want to encourage you that by setting boundaries, you've just done some serious life-changing, recovering, people-pleasing work. And this doesn't happen in a day or a week. It's often just part of this emotional intelligence journey of our lives. This takes time and effort to grow, but you know what? Boy, is it worth it. Reach out if you need any help. I'm always available to Champion Your Life.
Thank you for listening to Champion Your Life with me, Leanne Champion, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To find out more about me and my coaching platform, visit championyourlife.com. That's championyourlife.com. You have one precious life. Let's live it to your fullest potential. Let's go. Let's do this together. See you next time.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us on and turn us on. You know, you all heard me talk about growing up with a woman that was born in the South, the Deep South. And there are many things I've learned about the South and many things that I am also so acutely aware of, drawn to, and will always be in my bones. But the latest statistics on the state of education for students of color and low-income students in Southern United States is not just profoundly shocking. But if my mom were here today, she would have a call to action so great that I'd be out there with her on the streets as we did as children. Joining me here today are two incredible people, Raymond Pierce and Megan Crowe. All I can say is this. Raymond is the CEO of the Southern Education Foundation, and Megan joins us here as a senior research and policy analyst for Southern Education Foundation. To what you're about to hear today are real numbers, real information. And the question has to be, what can you do? What can we do? Has anything changed since my mom walked the planet? Welcome to both of you, Raymond, Megan. It's great to have you both joining me here today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I am a researcher myself, so anytime I get a report or anytime I get information like this, I always look at the numbers and check and double check and triple check and whatever checking. But this is, to use the word in a, probably an understatement, but it's really so odd that in the world we're living in today, we're still talking about this. Raymond, Megan, Raymond, let's start with you. In the world today, we're still talking about this, right?
All right, unfortunately.
I want to ask you both this first question, and then we'll get to the statistics. I want to know from each of you, what is it that gets you up every day? You know, what is the thing that has touched your heart, that has called you to step forward on a life path that shines awareness on inequity and in some cases, injustice? What is it for each of you? Raymond, let's start with you.
Well, good question. And I'm a little bit older than Megan, and I've been in this fight for civil rights for many, many years on a number of angles. And I'm also, interestingly, a recent graduate of divinity school. So I kind of look at this differently.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, inequity or disparity or unfairness, I just don't believe that's the way life is supposed to be.
No.
And that the inopportunities, the oppression, the disparities are because self-interest has been allowed to prevail. Self-interest, fear, discrimination has been allowed to prevail in our policies and practices all the way up to this day. And this is nothing new. The people who actually created what is now the Southern Education Foundation, many of them were abolitionists who abolished slavery. We go back before the Civil War. And it started right after the Civil War. And it, there were, have always been people in this nation, a black, white, whomever, who have felt that we cannot go on as a people if we with inhumanity baked into our systems. And inhumanity, whether it's slavery, inhumanity, whether it's Jim Crow, discrimination, just whatever, that's inhumanity. We cannot exist and do well as a people if we treat one another like this. So I look at it that way. So I wake up every morning, and particularly now at this point in my career, and I feel myself fortunate, if not blessed, to be the president of the Southern Education Foundation, advancing this historic over 155-year mission of advancing opportunity, education opportunity for African Americans in the South and now students of color. And quite frankly, our original charter included poor whites back in 1867. I get on fire, and so to have people like Megan Crow on our team to do this type of lengthy research that guides us in our policy recommendations and guides us in our conversations with legislators and policymakers to develop better policies and practices for the education of our children. I get excited about it just about every day I get up.
Wow. Thank you so much. Megan, how about you? What is it that literally touches your heart every day?
Thanks for that question. You know, if you ask my mom growing up, she'd tell you I had a justice bone from the start. But I have traveled enough to realize that Americans are really given a deficit mindset, this idea that I have to take from you to get what I need. And it's not true. We all do better when we work together to achieve results. It costs us less as a nation to prevent problems than it does to treat them. And I have a young child myself, and I just feel very moved and aware of the level of privilege and opportunities that he has that other people don't. And I also recognize that if half of us are doing poorly, if half of us are in poverty or are unable to meet our needs, that actually depresses my sons and my economic opportunities as well. And I just really wish that as a society, Americans would think in a more collective way and understand we all do better when we're working together.
I'm on the same page as both of you, and I know that every day I'm shocked at what I hear. Let me just be very, very clear. I mean, the fact that I am witnessing in my lifetime, after being an advocate, a protester, you name it, for almost all of my life, to see an equal pay for women bill get crushed in the Senate and then to even be talking about voting rights. So let's talk about how important it is for us all to get educated, right? Because I did a poll and I asked close to 30 to 40 women if they even knew that there was an equal pay bill on the table. One out of 40 did. So let's talk about where education lies in order for all of us to come together as humanity. Raymond?
It's so well stated. Awareness is critical. Awareness of the disparities alone, like the one you just pointed out in terms of equal pay. There are just some data and points of information that the major population of masses just don't know. And we're constantly finding ourselves being distracted by things that will divide us, whereas common interests and common values are much larger. Things like everybody wants their children to have an opportunity for a good education. Everybody wants to be able to go to a grocery store and be able to afford good food. Everyone wants to be able to live in a safe neighborhood. Everyone wants to be free of harassment. Everyone wants to be able to have access to capital to finance their dreams, whether it's a loan for a small business or whatever. But the bad reality is today, because of bad policies and bad practices, inequitable policies and inequitable practices, quite frankly, selfishness and greed amongst a few, these disparities just continue to sadly linger on. It is sadly linger on. And so reports like ours are there to point that out and point to a better way, policies and suggestions and solutions that could better address this. And it's nothing new. It's nothing that we don't know in our right mind would be better, for our entire nation, if not the entire world.
it's just getting around those the selfishness and that unfortunately continues to pervade throughout our policies.
Mm. And thank you for both of you. Thank you for both of you, again, shining a light on this. Because I'll tell you what, if we don't keep shining a light on things like this, what happens with that is the dark takes over. And then we have to catch up to you a little bit about this. You know, this is something, you're an analyst, you see the numbers, you're watching things, you're looking at, you know, levels of awareness. I want to ask you this question. How correct am I when I said before, you know, some things have not changed?
Oh, well, you know, I would say not only have things not changed, but some of them have gotten worse.
There you go.
For example, the children eligible for free or reduced price lunches. That is a federal program, and the percentage of students that are able to receive free and reduced price lunches in schools has increased almost 10 percentage points in the last decade. You know, and workplace policies that were instituted back in the 1930s that protected certain industries predominantly worked by white males, those protections continue to this day to not protect workers in certain industries, like agriculture is one example. As well, they don't, as you pointed out, protect women to the same extent. Also, we see white men more often employed, more often promoted to positions of leadership, and then they become more likely to continue to promote people that look and, you know, talk like them. And so black leaders, other leaders of color, are continuously passed over for jobs for which they are equally, if not more, qualified. And this is depressing the economic outcomes of generations over time. So things that happened historically 100 years ago are not only still with us, but the compounding negative impacts have grown over the course of years and further depressed each subsequent generation's outcomes.
You know, what I'm really struck by is, and first of all, thank you for sharing that. Here's what I'm really struck by, and I know this is a short interview, so I want to really try to honor your time. But before I ask my next question, how do people find out more about exactly what we're talking about and what you all are doing? Raymond, you want to give us that information?
Well, it's on our website, www.southerneducation.org. Our new report that's coming out now is right on that page. But you can go on our website and find out much of what we're doing, a lot of our publications, and our announcements.
Yeah, and I want to say to everybody, if you go there, you'll be able to see right on the homepage there's a fact sheet. If you go to the resource section of the site, you'll also see a blog, publication, news, and events. There's a lot here. But most importantly, when you go to the website, there's something very interesting that I grew up with. You know, it's a word that my mom always put forward to us about who we were going to become in the world, and that's called the challenge. I want to ask each of you, this is more than just a fact sheet and research. For me, this is a call to action. I was talking with a number of, you know, colleagues of mine, and I said, can we get together? Because I want to plan for what we're going to do the next million-person march that we're going to do once the switch is flipped on COVID. And they looked at me on a call, and they said, that could be a year from now. And I said, okay. So what are you going to do? Are you going to sit and do nothing? Or are you going to try to think ahead on what you're going to do to cause a change? That's what I want to ask each of you in parting. What is your personal message? What is your call to action for people that will hear this, people in the United States but all over the world, about?
Get involved.
Get involved.
Get involved. Get involved, people. Get the facts. Make sure that look at the facts and check the references and the resources for the facts. There's so much misinformation out there, and a lot of that misinformation is designed to make people feel good about the status quo. People should not feel good about the status quo, and people should understand that the disparities and many of the problems that exist today that are visited upon certain populations of this country are by design. They were baked in. Slavery was by design. Jim Crow was by design. Redlining was by design. And the vestiges and the remnants of that continue on to this day. And the facts are there. The facts are there. So just, you know, please, people, get involved, educate yourself, and then get involved with your legislators, your elected officials, to bring about policies and practices that are good for all citizens of this country, and not just for a few.
Raymond, thank you. Megan, how about you? What do you want to leave us with today?
My message for today, I think, would just be that, like it or not, we have to all get together. You know, the inequities that disproportionately affect black and brown kids in the U.S. ultimately do affect everybody. You might not see it readily in your homes or in your daily lives, but once we get out into the workforce and we talk about the U.S.'s ability to stay competitive on the global marketplace, we are losing significant ground. And I know that everybody cares about having a thriving economy in which they live. So if we treat the most underserved among us, we treat everybody in the state. So we need to get together and all do this for everyone, because the results that are yielded for a black child out in a rural southern state affect my kid's future.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much to both of you. Again, Megan, give us that website.
Yes, the website is www.southerneducation.org.
Thank you. Thank you so much to both of you. And you all out there, please check it out. Yes, there is something you could do. Let's take a short break. We'll see you in a minute. Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on for a good news segment. Now, look, many of you have heard me talk about what it's like to one day wake up and be cut off from the people that you're so accustomed to being around. But what is it that we've learned from this? So I'm not the expert in here. Dr. Lee Lindquist is chief of geriatrics at Northwestern Medicine. And here's the thing. Social isolation is bad as smoking for seniors. Wow. Dr. Lindquist, great to have you here.
Yeah, yes. Thanks for having me, too.
Yeah. So my listeners have heard me kind of, like, talk about the fact that, you know, one day all of us are up playing table tennis, and, you know, we have great facilities here for seniors. And they start at a fairly young age. Like, our senior center is, like, 55 or something. I don't even know. But this is a gathering place, and people were so just distraught. They were just so in pain by the isolation. What have you discovered about the isolation from this pandemic?
Yeah, so I'm a geriatrician, so I take care of older adults, and gotcha. I'm an expert when it comes to senior care.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing is that people are experiencing significant cognitive loss and physical function loss with this isolation. So people who normally just have a few senior moments, it's increasing. The number of senior moments are increasing. People are forgetting to do things that they normally have been able to do. And so it's really taking an impact on people's health. And so that's one thing that we're seeing more and more, is that as this isolation continues, people are really struggling with it.
You know, I mean, it's a bold statement to say it's as bad as smoking. But I know from everything that I've talked to people about, it really is. Tell us what people, seniors, are experiencing. What have they been experiencing?
Living in a nursing home. Mm. If you think about living in four walls and not being able to go outside and it just having a TV in your room, this is like being in a nursing home. And so we've seen so many times, and there's so many studies out there, that if you don't exercise your brain, if you don't exercise your muscles, and you think of your brain as a muscle, it tends to go to sludge. And so when we hear people that say, oh, so-and-so went into a nursing home and their cognition got really bad, yeah, I mean, this is what we're seeing, is that older adults who are isolating, rightly so, to avoid COVID, are actually having cognition problems. And we're seeing this over and over again.
You know, I want to ask you this question because I've had this conversation before, and it seems like we are baffled as to what to do. But I believe there are things that we can do, and I believe there are things that, you know, whether it's assisted living or, you know, someplace where a senior is residing now, there are things we could do. Is awareness really the issue here, that people are not aware that this is the effect and therefore they don't think there's anything, any action to take?
I think it's actually more than awareness, because I feel like there's no pill, there's no easy medicine to take to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
What I usually recommend people do is that they need to socially stimulate more. You know, give people calls, call your friends, call other seniors, reach out to people you haven't talked to in a while. Listen to a show like the Pat Show, the Dr. Pat Show, and contact others and say, I listened to this great show. Actively socially stimulate yourself and others. And then the other thing is to exercise. We know that exercise can improve cognition, can delay cognitive loss, and that's something that we haven't been able to do because of COVID. And so the more exercise, the less sitting. Even if you sit 5 minutes less a day, your thinking is going to be better, your muscles are going to function better, and you're going to be healthier.
You know, Dr. Lindquist, you've been featured in hundreds of media venues. You've been on pretty much every television network out there. This is beyond a conversation. This is your passion and your purpose. Tell me what your heart early on to have this become a life path for you.
Yeah, and thank you for that. I grew up closely with my grandparents, and they lived in rural Wisconsin, and they were the youngest of seven and the youngest of five. So we were always visiting people in the nursing home, always visiting people, you know, who are older and remote. And it just really showed me that these were people who definitely needed good care, who definitely needed more support. And they weren't always getting the best health care, and they weren't always getting treated well. And so that's why it's a passion of mine that we need to treat our seniors better. But then we also have to help our caregivers, our family members of loved one, help connect them to the correct or to the right care. And in geriatrics, there's not enough geriatricians to go around to help all the seniors out there. And so with Northwestern Geriatrics, we've been able to build a program where we can offer telehealth no matter where you are in the country. And you can get a geriatric evaluation for your loved one over the phone or over a Zoom call. And so if people are interested, they can definitely reach out to us at Northwestern Medicine Geriatrics, which is at nm.org/geriatrics. Because it's so important that we take care of our seniors, because if we're lucky, we'll all be seniors someday. And we need to keep it going. We need to pass on the goodness.
And tell everybody how they can find out more about this, how they can find out more about, you know, what you all are doing. What's the best website for people to go to?
Yeah, so it's the Northwestern Medicine Geriatrics website, which is nm.org/geriatrics.
So let's talk for a minute on solutions. We cannot emphasize enough that isolation takes many forms, many forms. The very fact that perhaps one day you were communicating, whether it be in assisted living, whether it be in a senior home, it doesn't matter, but you were communicating one day and the next day you were not. It seems like the general consensus is, well, they can just do a Zoom call. That is not exactly how this works, but there are solutions. Even if we look at something as this simple stair machine that you sit down and you use that the family could buy for their parents, there are solutions, aren't there, to keep the body moving, to keep people fresh.
Yeah, one of my favorite Christmas gifts that I saw people passing around, and you can even think about like future birthday presents or just because presents, were Fitbit watches or like those Garmin watches.
Yeah.
Where I've had a couple seniors that bought it for other senior friends, and then they all compete to see how many steps they take. Or we've seen grandkids have a Fitbit watch and the grandparent have a Fitbit watch or Garmin watch, whichever one. And then they can give each other, you know, cheers and like fireworks if they hit a specific target, or they say, okay, grandma's not moving as much, let's get her moving, and kind of prompt her to get going. And I think it's also a fun way. We think of intergenerational discussions, intergenerational stimulation as being huge, because if you can have grandkids interacting more with grandparents, whether it's teaching them how to use technology or, you know, texting back and forth, these are things that will stimulate the senior, but then also give value to the senior from a, grandparent or grandchild view. Because we know that if a grandchild treats the parent, treats the grand, if a grandchild treats the grandparent well, then there's a good chance that they'll treat their own parents well.
Yeah, I love that we're talking about this because, you know, we have to get innovative around this. You know, my friend's mom and dad, they have these, what is it called, Sudoku contests, where they all get the same book and they all go through it and they have, you know, these prizes that they've created for people that can get through it, that want to do that. There's so many different things that I'm finding that are becoming innovative to really support each other. And it's really fascinating how sophisticated this has gotten. I mean, if you want a clue, you have to give up a cookie or something. I love it, by the way. I just love it.
And I'm glad you're mentioning it because, like, people are, like, one of the things that we're practicing or trying here is for our research is that we're actually putting the Oculus, those VR virtual reality headsets you see advertised all the time. We're actually putting them on seniors as well as grandchildren and seeing how they walk through parents together, even though they're in two different states, and seeing how they interact. So it's very interesting how we can harness technology to support our seniors.
Well, I love what you're doing. I love that you're coming out here. I know that I live in the Pacific Northwest, and one of the things that we are, how should I say it? Our senior population are nationally ranked table tennis players. I'm just going to put it out like that. But we also support the Bat Foundation because we found that the studies on a special type of ping pong table is so good for the brain. And so we've been really out there in the state of Washington really pushing this forward and really saying to these places, look, this is just another thing you can do. We don't know why the science shows the improvement in brain functionality, but it does. People get involved. Because if we're not getting involved in this, we're not going to come up with ideas. You know what I'm saying?
No, and I love the table tennis idea. I will say, growing up with my grandparents, we actually had a table tennis set downstairs, and we would play for hours. Table tennis. So I actually can beat my kids hands down anytime we come across a table. So I love that a lot of your listeners are table tennis players. But it comes down to, you know, actually reaching out to people. And that's not always something that we're comfortable with, is reaching out to others and checking on them, talking to them, whether it's a person that we haven't talked to in a long time. There's this need to not bother people. I don't want to bother them. But, yeah, we should be bothering them. We should be stimulating them. We should be talking to them. And the other thing, too, is to, you know, speak to the physicians, speak to the geriatricians that are involved in their care to see if there's anything that more that can be done to help support them.
Now, I know we have, like, 2 minutes left, but I must ask you this question. I don't think our listeners really understand why isolation is so dangerous. I work with women in addiction and recovery, and I know firsthand why isolation, regardless of age, is so dangerous. But why is it so dangerous for seniors?
Yeah, so isolation worsens your memory, it worsens your physical function, and it worsens your mood. So isolation is as bad as smoking, and that's why we're trying to help people be less.
Well, I want to thank you for today. I know that you have so many of these interviews to do. But I also would like to remind people again, how do they find out more? You know, Dr. Lindquist, how do they get involved? And then I'd like to know your personal message, what you'd like to leave us with today.
Yeah, so people can reach us at nm.org/geriatrics, which is the Northwestern Medicine Geriatrics website. And my statement would be to stay well, reach out to people around you, talk to them, and sit less every day. Get some exercise in those bodies.
I love it. Thank you so much, Dr. Lee Lindquist, expert in the field, passionate about what we can do to improve the life, the lifestyle, and the longevity of our most precious, precious assets.